Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
I feel like Mr. Roger.
This is your neighborhood.
Yeah, it's like, hello, who's at the door? Oh, look, he just walked right in front of the camera, too, right? You know, the thing about old friends is you just got to accept them for what they are.
That's right. They're old.
He just bumped my shoulder, too, okay? I do a radio show. I don't get abused on the air, okay? So watch it. All right. But, no, that's my friend Gert, who I went to college with in Switzerland so many moons ago.
Made it down off the mountain here?
No, his name is not Muhammad, and he did not go to the mountain. No, but we went to school in Switzerland, and actually...
He doesn't just say we went to school. He could have just said we went to school, but he also has to say in Switzerland. He just throws that in as a little aside.
I keep hoping that you're either going to play Sound of Music or some soundtrack from Heidi, but you fail every single time.
What's going on? I don't want to reward that behavior.
You don't want to reward that behavior? Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Pristine over there. What was it?
The Hash Bash.
Hash Bashes, right. Whatever.
University of Michigan Hash Bash.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I went to Switzerland and you went to Michigan. You had hash. Well, actually,
we won't
talk about what we had in Switzerland.
Felt the same amount of snow, probably.
Yeah, except we could ski. You guys were flat.
Oh,
you know, there was no mountains.
Oh,
yeah.
See? Okay, Switzerland's just so much sexier
you mess with the bull.
You get stuck.
The horns, right? Oh, we're on live, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we're live feeding on Facebook, too. Okay. So anybody who's listening in... we are also on Facebook. Where are we today? We're like a moving target, so nobody can find us.
OCTalkRadio.net.
OCTalkRadio.net.
I'm sorry, you can go to Facebook/OCTalkRadio.
Okay, and that's Paul if you don't know who it is, because you can't probably see him. He's not on camera, but he's off to the side there.
I'm the Wizard of Oz.
I remember when we first started the show, I said, you know, you're kind of like my Robin. And he goes, like what, Batman and Robin? And I said, no, like Howard Stern and Robin, right? And that pretty much, you know, set the course for the whole show for the last 2 years. But I have some friends in the audience. You know, we got like a live audience. Can we get like applause?
Yeah. Oh, here, right. I got all applause.
Right. Oh, you got applause set up?
I got one.
Okay, let's have applause.
You want some applause?
Yes, yeah. Please, applause. Hey!
Look at that. That's a lot of people.
Okay, so we have Wendy and Gert, who I went to school with. I won't tell you where, in Switzerland. And they were visiting, so we had an impromptu breakfast, and I want to give a shout-out to one of my favorite places in San Juan, even though they're not a sponsor, but they should be, Ramos House.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't they wonderful? That is a great place.
Amazing place.
Awesome. Right across from the Mission, right across the tracks from Mission San Juan Capistrano.
So for all those South County residents, you know, it is okay to venture on the wrong side of the tracks because there's a Ramos House over there.
What's the guy's name? He lives in there, and he's the chef and everything here?
I would assume Ramos.
No. I don't know, but he raises his own chicken.
Yeah, he raises his own herbs and everything. Mm-hmm. And he lives on the property, and he's a chef there as well, or at least it started off he was the chef. I think he has other people cooking as well now there.
But. For the newcomers in South County, they probably believe he's homeless, but no. He's actually the chef for a famous restaurant. Right? And it is amazing food. Wendy, what did you have?
I think it was the scrambled eggs with crab meat. And
so that, we could give her a mic if you want.
You want to give her a mic? I don't know. I'm afraid.
You can pull it right down
the mic
you there.
Above you. Gert, can you pull that mic down? Yeah, I had the Huevos Rancheros, which was phenomenal.
Spin it around.
And the crab hash
that's so amazing.
That Wendy had.
And then you have to put
Gert had, what do you have, Gert?
The truffle mac and cheese.
Truffle mac and cheese. So anyway... We're very nice. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't bring you any food.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, and that's Tanya Brown, who is a friend of the show. How many times have you been on the show, Tanya?
Four
times.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, we co-hosted, and I remember you were there. You came when you had the first book, your first book, which was Finding Peace.
Amid the chaos.
Which I don't know what you're doing here.
I don't either.
Right, because this is totally chaotic.
We need
right?
to find peace amid this chaos.
And then you co-authored a book with Carolyn Inman, right?
The Seven Characters of Abuse, Domestic Violence, Where It Starts and Where It Can End.
Now, are those books both out?
Yes.
And available.
Yes. Okay. The Seven Characters is available. You can get it through my website at tonybrown.net or Amazon. And Finding Peace through the or Amid the Chaos is through my website.
Okay. And that's tonybrown.com?
.net.
And you're here because people probably don't know, but October is...
Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Right. So we want to raise some awareness.
Yeah.
Raise some jokes.
Yeah.
You know, do some stuff here.
You have to.
Right.
You got to keep this stuff light. I mean, this is heavy. This is heavy stuff.
Well, and that's what I tell people. We started off the first show was we talked about elder abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, hello, we're a new show.
How did anybody tune in the second
week? Look forward
to
the next episode because we're going to talk about elder abuse now.
Right.
And then hospice. We look forward to talk about hospice next year.
We haven't done colonoscopies yet. Colonoscopies or whatever.
Very important.
You know, I don't try to be that anal.
Okay. Oh,
but,
yikes.
Okay.
He's hot. He's on fire today.
But before anything, okay, yep. I hear that you have a message to deliver.
I sure do.
Okay, so could you please deliver your message?
I will. I actually have to read it because I don't want to get anything mixed up here. So my friend Frank Shankwitz, who is a founder and the creator of Make-A-Wish Foundation, and he said
And he was, to me, our, he was our guest last week.
Yeah, last week. Mm-hmm. He goes, I know you've been on Rod's radio show before, so rock it again. But he said this. His show was probably the most enjoyable experience I've ever had.
Wow.
Let's settle for a minute. Okay.
His show was probably the most enjoyable he's ever had.
I love this. I queued her up. She just basically just said it again.
Wow.
Okay. This is from Wishman himself, right?
Yes.
The book is called Wishman. Mm-hmm. The movie rights have been purchased. They're in production.
Yeah. And I think
pre-production, right?
Yeah.
And
which means they're casting and writing the script and all that.
The man who founded Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Isn't that crazy? There's always a person behind a cause. I love that.
Right?
That was a great
and his story is amazing.
That's a great
and if people,
cause.
Yeah. And if people didn't listen to that, I think we have it live. Actually, didn't we feed it live on YouTube?
I believe
it's on YouTube. Excuse the production. We had a little stop and start on some of these shows because we're trying to work out some of the bugs. But it's on there. It's an amazing story. If you get a chance to pick up the book, it is, I think, available through Amazon as well. It's called Wishman. And then the movie's coming up. I hope it comes up because it is amazing how this story, and we mentioned it on the show last week, every bit a movie wants to have in it,
yes.
The emotional,
mm-hmm.
the kid, the, you know, motorcycle cop,
mm-hmm.
you know. The mesas of Arizona with the sunsets and the red rock and all that stuff. It's amazing. Okay. So
thank God for Chris. You know, Chris was 7 years old when he died of leukemia, and thank God it was Frank and his team of motorcycle cops and his friends, and they collaborated and they created a Make-A-Wish Foundation.
So I'm gonna return the courtesy to Frank. Thank you, Frank, for your kind words on the show. We really enjoyed having you here. But I will say this. For a gentleman who basically is so iconically responsible for a key foundation in this country that does amazing work.
Globally,
right? To be so approachable, so reachable, so humble, so personable. So I just want to say thank you, Frank, for actually doing the show, and thank you for being who you are and what you do, and I can't wait for the
it
book.
It was one of those you could not
to be
turn off.
Oh, the most humble man, besides my dad, my own dad,
mm-hmm.
the most humble person,
mm-hmm.
not just man, the most humble person I've ever met in mm-hmm. my entire life. At my door, my mom's door, everybody who is close to me welcomes Frank in, because he's just an amazing
person. And that comes across the minute he walks into the room.
Yeah.
So... Let's change gears here for a minute, okay? And let's talk about domestic abuse and domestic violence, okay? Now, I know you both have your own personal journey, and you've kind of overcome your own obstacles and difficulties in dealing with chaos and different challenges. And then when you co-authored the book with Carolyn, there were certain things that you did differently with this book, right, mm-hmm. as far as how you positioned it.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because last time you were here, we didn't really cover that very well.
Exactly. Well, as I don't know if your listeners know, I'm the youngest sister of Nicole Brown Simpson. So Nicole was the face of domestic violence,
right.
and like Chris was for Make-A-Wish Foundation, as Rock Hudson and Michael or Magic Johnson are for HIV and AIDS. So there's always a face to a cause. Sadly, but thankfully, we don't sit in that victimization. We use a person to help spread awareness to hopefully make global change. And so Nicole was that face, is that face. And after when Nicole was murdered, we actually, before her abuse was even admissible in court, because we didn't even know until we cleaned out her home and we found pictures and diaries. I mean, it was very, domestic violence is very silent, and it's a silent killer. It's really a silent killer.
And nobody wants to get into it.
Nobody wants to talk about it.
No.
I mean, now 22 going on 23 years later, we're finally still, it's not quite up on the kitchen table for conversation, but at least it's getting closer to say, hey,
we've had people from Laura's house on here that provide shelter for domestic abused women, and they say how often they go back and how often they say, I feel like I'm just trapped. I have no other way to go. I economically can't support myself with those kids, or he says he's going to be sorry and all that. But and the one thing they said over and over again is, there really is nobody to talk to. I'm embarrassed to talk about it. My family doesn't want to hear about it. My friends say, well, there must be two sides to the story.
Well,
he's such
scared.
A nice guy. And
that's really the number one fear, Paul. It's like they're fearful. They are scared. It's like if I tell somebody, who knows what's going to happen to me? Listen, the monster that they know only lives behind the door.
Well, isn't there also a fact that there's sort of a shame aspect to it, too?
And like,
it must be my fault.
Embarrassment.
Fear, guilt, and shame. They're you know, scared because they actually have a 75% higher chance of getting killed if they do leave.
Wow.
So why should I leave? Yeah. At least I have shelter. And if I keep my mouth shut, you know, abuse won't happen. I'll still get food on the table. I'll just keep the peace and
I'll just take it. That is the statistics?
Yeah.
For people who leave, the chance of basically being killed.
So that's why majority of the people do stay.
So it's interesting because you probably are not looking at statistics when you're going through it yourself, but just to basically be fair to people that are struggling with it and are being subjected to that, the statistics actually say
75% higher chance of dying. Getting killed, not dying.
And I understand fear.
So how
that was a statistic 20-something years ago. That statistic probably went up.
Well, and let me just step back and take people back like to 20 years. Okay, people talk about like where were you when 9/11 happened? Or you know, maybe a generation before, where were you when Kennedy was shot, right?
Right.
To me, the moment when Nicole, that whole thing happened, I was living in West LA. Okay? And I remember, like, as clear as day, everybody just being glued. I mean, and this is not, I can't even imagine from the family side, right? But glued. And in your case, and you've said it before on the show, you know, where you didn't even have the ability to have the privacy of dealing with this. You were in the public eye forever, it seemed like, right? And so it is, it may be 20 years ago, but it is extremely, like, that I could go back to that moment.
Absolutely. Even, in fact, yesterday, because I do a lot of addiction recovery, treatment, awareness, and right now we're in Red Ribbon Week, so I spoke at Don Juan Middle School yesterday, and I'm talking to a whole bunch of 11-year-olds. They all knew who OJ and Nicole were.
Wow.
So, you know, this is topic of conversation in history and textbooks and psychology. I mean, the books that we read when we were 11 in 6th and 7th grade aren't the books that they're reading today, the textbooks. So, it's out there and they're familiar with it. So
has it changed much in 20 years other than increased awareness?
Yeah, but gosh, we have so okay, the NFL is probably going to get me on this, but I would love to see, and I, you know, my mom is a breast cancer survivor. She had stage 3C in, you know, at the age of 80. But let's bring in some purple in there, too, for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. They both shared the same awareness month, and both are detrimental, you know. They both affect women. And breast cancer, men too. Men get breast cancer. Men are victims of domestic violence. And to tell you the truth, men, violence against men, also in domestic violence situations, intimate partner violence, is on the increase.
That's what I'd heard.
I would think it's probably even underreported because there's also that sort of that.
I'm a man.
Gender stigma.
Man, I can take care of myself.
I'm a man. I'm the man of the house. I can take it. I don't want to let anybody know that I'm having a hardship. And and there are actually safe havens for men as well. So it's it goes cross borders, cross genders, cross all ages. I mean, I have
answered
always
the one question though and I found this the most difficult to accept when the people from Laura's house were in here. I wrap my head around. I get that they're afraid, so they can't leave and whatnot. But when they do leave, when they finally get away, they said it takes at least 3 or 4 times before you finally break that connection because the spouse, the significant
other. You get drawn back.
Oh, yeah.
Continue.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'll change.
It's a cycle.
Yeah.
It's the whole, and I mentioned this in the book, where it's the crisis phase. And there's a wheel of cycle. It's called the cycle of violence, and it's a wheel. But when I was out there speaking, and I still am, but whenever I went out and I spoke on college campuses, everybody always still equated domestic violence with physical or sexual assault.
Right.
So I came back to
not the emotional.
There are so many others. So even though I was sharing stories because I was an advocate in San Diego under a grant for Palmerado Hospital, I think that was the name of it. And this was back in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And so I used some of the clients that I worked with. I, of course, changed the names. I've changed the stories a little bit. But the significance behind the story is still a different character of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I first met Carolyn Inman, who I wrote the book with, I said, Carolyn, something's missing. I go, people aren't getting it. And then we got into a conversation of how she had gone to Disneyland. We were talking about the seven dwarfs. And I would go, and then that's when we just kind of said, let's put these stories that I share about all the women and the advocacy that I did. Mm-hmm. Let's put a character to them. Mm-hmm. And so then that was my presentation. Then I began to see, okay, Carolyn, people are really resonating with this. They're liking it. It's giving people clarity and concise information.
So let's take some examples because you said, you know, a lot of people think of it in terms of sexual abuse or things of that nature. Okay, let's talk about a couple of the things that are not as easily recognized.
Jealousy. Yeah. So we coined the jealous stalker because jealousy, especially with our youth, is not love. But yet, put yourself in your teenage years. Oh, she's calling me all the time. Oh, he's calling all the time. He's, you know, they equate that. Teenagers and young adolescents.
Texting all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Now we live in that right. era right now, too. But it's like.
He's so jealous. He must really love me. Nobody else can look at me or touch me or see me.
Exactly.
Isn't that kind of flattering?
It's checking. Exactly. Flattery. They look at that as a sign of love, and it's not. It's checking up on you. It's wanting to know who you're hanging out with. What are you wearing so you don't look so good?
Stalking, Cusby.
Exactly.
Control. Yeah.
Control. Well, and that's what domestic violence is. Intimate partner violence, domestic violence, whatever you want to call it, it's all about power and control. And Nicole is the victim of the ultimate act of power and control. If I can't have you, nobody can.
Yeah, right.
And so anytime I speak on high school campuses or college campuses, it is that. Everybody always says, well, he just cares about me, doesn't he? And I'm like, no, you may want to... If a relationship is not equal, if one is always having power over
control,
the other one, you know, and I believe there's always kind of, you know, like
it fluctuates.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was raised more traditional. So my dad always took care of my mom, but not in a controlling way. So I remember there was this young man. He was huge. He was probably a sophomore at California University in Pennsylvania. I'll never forget him. He came in late. So he didn't really realize, and I share the story in here, actually. He came in late, so he didn't hear the introduction that men can also be a victim of domestic violence. So he came in, you know, 6'6", you know, big, like, African-American, playing basketball with his guys. And he's coming in with his gym shorts on, and he pulls me aside, and he goes, hey, he asked me. I'll never forget him. He asked, can a guy be a victim of domestic violence too? And I said, oh, yeah. So we had this great conversation on how he goes, because my girl is always like wanting to know where I am, who I'm playing ball with. And then once she finds out where I'm playing ball, she's always like looking through the chain link fence to see if I'm actually playing basketball with my. So it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. If a relationship is based on where are you? Who are you hanging out with? Are you telling me the truth or are you lying? That's something to reconsider. But yet you really have to be ready and aware because, yes, women do stay. Actually, it takes 11 times before they actually make that decision.
Wow.
To say, I'm done.
Well, and it's not something that happens overnight, right? In many cases, it's just something that slowly...
Oh, it's very insidious. Yeah. It just happens. It's a snake. It doesn't happen. You know, women don't marry the monster. If the monster showed itself on the first night, well, actually, let me take that back.
It does sometimes, yeah.
Nicole's actually, she did kind of have, I mean, according to David Laban, who was her friend from childhood, their first date was kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But somehow, I don't know. Nicole and OJ had a real, they had a real love affair. No joke. Like, they had this crazy love for each other. It was a beautiful relationship on so many levels, but it was a crazy violent love relationship on a whole other level. Mm-hmm. And we didn't find that out until after she was
murdered. Well, and some people equate that kind of drama in their lives as almost a measure of their existence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what do I do if I don't have any way to benchmark my existence by having these struggles and tribulations and overcoming certain things and basically then having that highs and lows? I mean, there's some people that'll tell you, you know, we fight like crazy, but then when we make up, we really make up, and it's awesome, and it's like, well, that's not really
healthy.
I mean, you know, I know it might sound boring to be more balanced,
but it's healthier, and it's long term.
What happens when you forget to actually, you know, take the blue pill to offset the red pill, right?
I mean, exactly. Well, the crazy thing about, and you know,
unfortunately, that's the way some of our society is wired.
Very much so. So I understand domestic violence. One thing that I still can't wrap my brain around is that my mom and dad never fought in front of us. If they fought, the only time I ever heard my mom and my dad bicker, not fight, is after the murder. Mm-hmm. Because your nerves are shot, there's stress and whatever. Yeah. We do that. But never, none of us have ever heard my mom and my dad fight. And I have asked all my sisters, well, except Nicole because she's not here, but I have asked Dominique and I've asked Denise, have you ever heard mom and dad fight in front of us? I said, I haven't. Neither have they.
Okay, so when this happened...
I think that was generational, too. That's why my parents
Well, they always
like
say that,
that
domestic violence is a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Then why did Nicole get into this relationship? So I still kind of have... Probably because I'm in it and it's too close for me to see it, but it's just really that is one thing that I don't.
So that's
understand.
Amazing. Even after all this time, you're still basically trying to figure out and understand.
You never heard it, but it just shows you how seductive a relationship can be and how a person with sexuality, sensuality, maybe some, you know, power, financial power, whatever, how that can just suck you in. So everybody
always
thinks...
What part of you isn't satisfied or fulfilled that is basically somehow appealing to?
And keep in mind, we're all girls.
Right.
We didn't know what football was.
Yeah.
So every time anybody always said, yeah, but it was O.J. Simpson, I'm like, who was that?
Who, yeah.
We didn't know because we're all girls. Nicole didn't even know.
Yeah.
O.J. had said to Nicole, I have to go to Buffalo on some business, but when I come back... I'm going to come back for you. He didn't say, I'm O.J. Simpson, I play for the Buffalo Bills, I'm going to go play a game and win and all that and come back for you.
Right.
We didn't know all of this.
Right.
So it just shows you. So people always think that domestic violence happens within like the indigenous populations or their low socioeconomic situation.
Right.
It's very...
Where men are taught to be more macho.
Well, you remember the lady that we had
on... This is very seductive. Financially, it's very, very seductive.
Yeah.
And the more
we
money you have, the more
difficult it is. We live in a celebrity-obsessed
world,
though, too. And at some point, when I'm sure it didn't take long for her to discover. And I'm not saying she's any different than anybody else, but we're all seduced by power. We're all seduced by wealth. We're all seduced by... He was good-looking. He's powerful. He's charming. He's famous. I mean, all of those things can be things
you remember the lady that we had few episodes that we had on the show where she came in and she was talking about affluent abuse?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and people
that
are living behind, you know, pristine gates and driving nice cars, but they're basically completely manipulated and controlled on the financial abuse side of things.
So that was Diana, and I talk about Diana in my book because Diana lived in a 20,000-square-foot home in Rancho Santa Fe. And... as long as I keep my mouth shut, I have clothing on my back. I have the finest of food. My kids can go to the best of schools. All the meanwhile, her husband was threatening her that if you ever leave, where are you going to go? You're the member of, you know, you'll ostracize yourself. You'll ostracize your children. You'll no longer be part of the community.
I'll destroy you.
So there's like
you.
These very seductive threats.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to find you. It's more seductive
threats. It's that
threats.
Control that you're talking
very
about.
Very much
control and manipulation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because there's a question I've always wanted to ask people that that live in this kind of heightened state. Okay, is that a passion? How do you define passionate living? And basically just stir out crazy.
Oh, so a passionate is because love. It's roses and it's flowers and it's chocolates and it's like spoiling your lady and spoiling your man.
But then something sneaks in and that becomes terrorized.
Violence.
Exactly.
Threats,
the little green monster
harassing,
tries to take over.
It's the flip side of a very, very sharp-edged knife. People say, because you hear it all the time, live your passion, live passionately, da-da-da-da, and all this stuff. And there's sort of this mass selling of your life needs to be exciting and
extreme,
passionate and extreme. And then, you turn on the TV and it's all this very heightened stuff that happens in 30 minutes. And then if you're not living at that level of intensity, you somehow feel like your life is insignificant. And this is what we perpetuate.
Exactly.
But isn't that the whole reality?
Exactly.
Isn't that the appeal of reality television?
And thank you. We brought reality television, our family brought reality television into the world. So really,
it's
all you parents
reality.
Out there watching everything, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But Vanity Fair even said that our case started reality television.
Because it's bigger than life. It's bigger than my life. It's something that it may be horrible, but I can't take my eyes off it.
Yes. It used to be a soap opera.
And
now it's become everything.
Yeah. Now it's every everyday life. So let me share a little personal story, and
please.
I've never shared this before.
Okay.
So it was about 2 years ago, I was dating a man who is a local man, very affluent, very prominent, worth millions. Had a great time with him because I was very attracted to his intellect. I was able to have conversations and intellectual conversations. We went to, we loved the arts, and it was different, and it was very seductive in that way. But there was no violence, no control, no jealousy until the very end. Until he really recognized the work that I do as far as, going out, and I'm speaking, I'm meeting with people.
Exposure.
I'm taking pictures with men whose children have died. I'm taking pictures of men who are motivational speakers. It's all... I'm not a flirt. I'm not going to bed with anybody.
Right.
It's what I'm doing to help people become better and become happier and offering that support. This person who I was dating, on the other hand, started sending me 6-page text messages, calling me names, real ugly. I asked my mother, awful.
And how long had you dated him?
I probably was with him. Okay, so shoot.
Like
6 months?
Before this came up, 6 months.
6 months, probably.
But can I ask a question?
Not even that.
Here's
the
question that everybody's... Okay, before you finish. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so hang on just a second. So here I am. I'm having lunch at the beach club in Monarch Bay because a young boy who is probably 26, who lives in Iowa, had never seen the beach before. And I said, hey, come down. I'll take you to lunch and we'll have, whatever. Well, you can see the water, the Pacific Ocean. I'm being kind. I got slammed. And I just went, wow, you know what? I don't care who you are. I don't care what social status you hold in the community. I don't care what buildings you own. I don't care how much money you have either in the bank or on paper. You disrespect me and you start calling me names and are jealous. Jealous. Remember the jealous stalker?
Mm-hmm.
That's who that was. So that's...
Jealous never changes. Yeah.
Jealousy never changes.
It's an
insecurity, you're scary. You're psycho. But you don't know what you don't know. And I'm very candid and open in sharing stories. It may put me on the edge a little bit with some people who may be hearing this, but I don't care. Because that experience, I was able to stop a relationship from going from character one all the way down to where my sister ended up.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never know what I don't know.
See, and people, I'm just going to play the devil's advocate. People will say, well, Tanya, you're basically filtering it through your own experience and what happened with your sister, and maybe it wasn't so bad. And I'll tell everybody this: the one thing all of us could learn early in life and apply is that when people tell you what they're all about, believe them.
Listen.
Mm-hmm.
And believe them.
And the point
that's
I was going to
make
are.
They're telling you who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, stop trying to figure out and say that that's not who they are.
And the point I was going to make is when these red flags come up, don't ignore them.
Don't ignore them.
When somebody puts a gun in your mouth and says, I might kill you today, and then next day you say, well, I don't know where that came from, or it sends you a 7-page text and calling you names,
yes.
Right away you should go, done.
Exactly.
But we all say, oh, that's just an outlier.
But it doesn't start with the gun in your mouth. It starts with, I'm at dinner ordering and I flirted too much with the waitress. Right? When I know myself, all I was being is just
kind.
Pleasant. And kind, and not really, okay? Because the real underlying element there is that there's an insecurity and distrust.
Absolutely.
That may not have anything to do with you. May be something that's coming baggage-wise from the other person.
It's all
Absolutely.
Them. It's
you
all
have,
them.
You have
it's their
a caller
projection.
Here.
Okay, so I think I know who it is.
Uh-oh.
Well, let's bring her on.
No, hold on.
Uh-oh.
Gert, you got the mic. No, you do it. Gert, find out who
you got to pull down the
phone. Find out farther. Who's on the call.
Who is it?
Oh, wait, we got to turn your mic up. That would help.
Yeah,
here.
Go ahead.
Let's turn your mic up. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Wendy.
So, who's on the phone?
This is Sue Ells.
Who else?
So, does everybody know who this is but me?
except Paul. Nobody else. Well, Tanya, I don't know if you know or not.
Do I know you, Sue? I mean, the name sounds familiar.
Tanya, I think we met once at an event a long time ago, but I've done lots of stuff with your sister.
Good. Thank you.
So that's how small the world is,
it's
right?
It's very small. Oh, yeah.
I'm having breakfast with Gert and Wendy, and basically, I'm like, hey, why don't you guys come to the show and just sit in, and, you know, maybe we'll do some applause or whatever for you guys. And then they go, oh, well, you know who should be on the show? Sue should be on the show. And I said, okay, sure, have her call in. And then I'd like, 10 minutes before we walked in here, I'm talking to her, and she goes, oh, I know Tanya's sister.
It's
wow.
a small world.
So, Sue, give the audience or the listeners a little background on how you may have run into Tanya's sister.
Sure. Well, I started actually my career in Ames, Iowa. I became a CEO of a shelter there, a domestic violence shelter and sexual assault center, and did that for about 10 years, and then moved to Kansas City and became the CEO of a shelter called Hope House in Kansas City. That we were a huge program in the Kansas City area, and I was there for 25 years, and then received a call to see if I would come and run the national office in D.C., so I spent another 10 years running the National Network to End Domestic Violence.
That's where I know
in
you.
D.C. There you go.
Yeah, that's where I know you. Like, the name sounds familiar.
And you bring up an interesting point. When you say Ames, Iowa, I have this image of, you know, this idyllic little farm community
wholesome America.
Yeah. This isn't going to happen in Ames, Iowa. It might happen in the inner cities where there's people are poor and they're at each other's throat. It might happen in wealthy communities where the men are controlling their wives, but not in the heartland of a God's country out there.
Right.
What's your experience been?
Domestic violence happens
everywhere.
Every age, every income level, every race, every everything.
So. You know what I say? I always say, if you are on this earth, you're walking this planet, and you breathe this air, it can happen to you. And mm-hmm. I even said to the parents last night, it was a red ribbon week. It's red ribbon week. And I said to the parents, I go, there's one thing that I always hear across this nation is, that can't happen to my kid.
Yeah, right. Can't happen
it
here.
It can happen to your kid.
Happens
it
over
happen
there
to
those people, but not to us.
Exactly.
Here.
Well, you know what? Here I always thought violence doesn't happen to us in Monarch Bay and Brentwood. It happens to those people over there.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying
wherever
those people.
There is,
just like wherever there is.
The poor, the difficulty.
It happens everywhere.
So what would you share from your experience? I mean, you've been involved in this for a long time in different capacities. What do you see that maybe has changed?
And what hasn't changed?
What hasn't changed?
And what needs to be changed?
Right. I would say the biggest thing that's changed is, a couple of things. One is that we do listen more. We have worked so hard legislatively to try to change laws to keep victims of abuse safe. And with the Obama-Biden administration, we made such great strides at that level of really changing the laws for women and children, as well as, you know, safe shelters and programs and law enforcement training and judge training and, mm-hmm. you know, all of those things. I mean, we just made tremendous strides. But I think that, you know, overall we still have a long way to go in changing attitudes, and I think that has been more apparent these last couple of years than I even suspected, and that there's just so much sexism still out there, mm-hmm. and, you know, the attitude toward women it's
well, we're certainly living it in the political cycle here right now. Not to go deep into that, but
a little bit of what I was referring to. Yeah, just, I'm pretty amazed by that. And when Domestic Violence Awareness Month comes around, and I see such great things happening all over the country to bring awareness to it, I'm just still surprised at. You know, oftentimes the first question that people hear is, why did she stay? You know, another homicide, why did she stay?
Why does he hit?
That's the wrong question. Mm-hmm. Right.
Why does he abuse?
Yeah.
Which, so let me bring that question up, because that's the other question that I can't wrap my head around. Why do men do this? Let's say it's primarily men against women, although it is, as she said, there's a growing female-on-male violence as well. It's becoming an equal opportunity
problem. But still, to a greater extent, majority of reported cases are...
So my dad never taught me to hit a woman. I don't think most men, if you went out there, we still have this attitude as equal as the sexes have become on the surface. We still think that we're supposed to maybe open a door and not hit a woman and all this stuff. It just that still permeates the culture. So when do men think it's okay to beat a woman? When do they look at themselves or their buddies say, "Man, you're beating your wife"? Well, that's okay. And they say, well, you know, she was a slut. She went out. She did this. She flirted. I had to, you know. In some cultures, that's okay. You know, it's still, we hear about in the Middle East and other places where it's still okay, this honor killing to control your women like that. But here, when do little boys pick up this message?
It's all they know. I think that's why I've never judged.
Because they watched it happen?
Yeah. I mean, I've never judged. Even when the Ray Rice incident happened. I mean, that was...
Yeah, right.
That really, really got me, even though knowing what my sister endured. But that was, like, blatantly right in front of all of our faces. I mean, you've seen...
Is that the guy that knocked her out in the elevator?
Yeah, and I've never even seen a bar fight. So this
But to really
be serious about that, that is when my impact... That's when I really saw, like, the harm. I mean, even though with all the education and Nicole and all of that, that was, like, right in front of everybody's face. But yet, I never judged, because that's all they know. That's how they were raised.
That's what they saw.
That's all they know. So the whole thing is, like, yes, I want to keep women safe. I want to keep their children safe. I want to educate on awareness and prevention. But also, we need to educate on batterers treatment programs. I really think that we don't give enough attention to that, because really, whether that's a male or a female, not just anger management, because not all angry people hit.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Right? Not all angry people hit. But right, if we can start talking about what we need to do to prevent people from hitting other people, especially your intimate partners. But really, it's all they know. I've never judged OJ. I've never judged Ray Rice. I've never judged. I'm all about be a person, be a man up, say I need help. Because you know what? If you can do that, could you just imagine the help and the face that you could be for global change?
Yeah.
Just knowing I messed up. Now what can I do to help other young boys and young girls?
Sue, are you still there?
Yeah, and okay. You know, I guess what I'm sitting here thinking about is the 30-some-odd years that I've been doing this work. And honestly, when you ask that question, what comes to my mind, I don't mean to get political, but these statements that Donald Trump made in that bus, I mean, to me, that just sort of epitomizes what the problem is, you know, that somebody would feel that kind of male privilege.
Well,
they could grab a woman like that.
No. And here's the thing. Okay, I wanted to state this. This may sound a little harsh, okay, but it's never okay. Okay, now we're trying to, you know, I think to our credit as a society, okay, we try to understand, we try to justify, we try to basically, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt, and to a certain extent, that's okay. But it's beyond that certain extent, I think we are actually enabling. Okay, because there is a point where something is just not okay.
Right.
Okay. When
right.
The thing that blew my
mind,
Sue, about what happened is not the fact that he said that, although that was just absolutely disgraceful. Okay, this was not a 18-year-old boy that was basically moving into high school, starting to play football, and wanted to hang out with his jock friends
in his fraternity,
and come across cool. Right. This is a 50-year-old man.
Yes.
Okay, who was on a bus. I don't care if the mics were turned on or off, okay, that was somewhat in a public face. He was a celebrity already. He puts friggin' gold letters on the side of a building, okay, and still feels the need to stroke his own ego and feel important by actually diminishing somebody else. Okay, that is not
and you
okay,
know what's sad
period,
is,
end of story.
Is he was trying to impress a much younger male,
yep.
That he's the alpha male.
Yes.
Right.
I'm trying to say I'm the king.
So it's not enough to have huge high-rises with gold letters on with your name on them. Mm-hmm. You still need to basically have a pissing match in the bus. Right?
Right, with little Billy Bush here, and make
then,
sure that
and amen that it was it the today it, the Today Show
fired Billy, yeah.
Fired him or suspended him,
yeah.
Suspended him.
Stop the relationship.
I feel bad for it, but you know what? Amen for
but
the
it,
Today
but
Show.
But that is never okay.
It's
okay,
not okay,
for people who for the women that showed up on
exactly.
media and basically tried to justify that after the release of this the last couple of days by saying that it's locker room talk.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a guy.
But
I didn't
go.
Play sport, but I spent time with guys. It is never okay. It was never okay to talk like that because you're diminishing another human being.
But
I don't
you know what?
Gender.
It is okay, and I'm sorry. I'm not a Donald Trump fan, so I'm not trying to defend him. But and I agree with everything you say. At some point, you're supposed to
grow out of
it.
It's not about the politics. It's just it's some.
But
some,
isn't there
humanity.
Face,
it's
some
humanity.
Schmuck that would act like that in front of me, I would not be friends with.
But
period.
Isn't there a point in your life? I certainly was
point,
in my life.
The point, really, if I could make the point yeah. about this is really where I was going with that, is that epitomizes what's wrong, but what's right now, and the glimmer that I see, that honestly, in my 30 years, it's one of the first times I've really seen this in action the way I've seen it this time, is people like you.
The outrage? The shunning, yeah.
Wrong, that athletes are coming, I'm seeing all kinds of things mm-hmm. on Facebook and Twitter
I
with
agree.
Athletes saying, this was totally wrong. We mm-hmm. don't speak like this in locker rooms. This is what we talk about. This is disgraceful. You know, I'm seeing politicians saying, you know, all of our, in fact, you know, people that I think some people look up to are coming out strongly saying this is wrong.
You know what's funny?
You know,
so, you know,
what?
Yes. You know what's
I
fun?
Haven't seen that before.
No, and I agree. And
hold on, Paul. And you know what's ironic about this, Sue? Is this is a man who ran a who's running a campaign saying that we are too politically correct, right?
Yeah.
If we were politically correct, we would basically justify this and somehow basically try to push it on the carpet. So you are absolutely correct. We are not politically correct, and we are not being politically correct by basically excusing this behavior.
Mm-hmm. Which right. goes to my exactly. point that maybe the culture has moved a little bit, because when I was in my 20s, or I was in college, or, you know, guys in a fraternity.
Go ahead, tell everybody how old you are, Paul.
I'm
he does it, on every
60.
Episode.
I'm old. I'm really old. I'm older than dirt. There was a point, let's face it, it's the Kennedy mystique, which Clinton tried to carry forward, too, that you're this cool ladies' man, and you can just seduce any woman that's out there, and women are there to be conquered. And that still permeates young male thinking. It's just that at some point you grow up and you say, whoa, this is, because suddenly you have children of your own, and you say, whoa. I don't want somebody to do this to my daughter. Wait a minute. This isn't so funny anymore here.
You grow
but,
out of it.
And most men grow out of it. But maybe that's the point, that we need to get it earlier and stop it earlier so that it doesn't take hold in some men and survive.
So, Sue,
the young boys.
Sue, let me ask you something. Maybe this is
and
actually
young women.
For you.
Yeah, right.
For,
exactly.
For you,
right. Young women are swaggering and smacking and stuff these days, too. They've
They're,
got this.
Yeah.
In your 30 years of experience, have you seen any different types of domestic violence? I mean, does it show differently among different social classes in society? Is there a pattern of different kinds of domestic
violence?
Are there
some people who are more prone to accept this behavior because of societal patterns? You think of Islamic societies where women are still treated as, you know, chattel.
No, I've seen it pretty much equal across most everyone.
Yeah.
It just really depends on, you know, I think so many factors, what the male grew up with and his environment, what the female grew up with and her environment. And let's remember that there's violence with same-sex marriages
sure.
and mm-hmm. couples as well. But I think, you know, the line that gets crossed in the sand, you know, how did the abuse start? How long did it occur before a hit happened? I mean, all of those factors, you know, go into it. What does she see as her safety net? Does she have any safety net? Has he isolated her from her friends, from
right.
her family, so that she doesn't see that she has anywhere to go? I mean, those are the kinds of factors that I see more often with, you know, triggering more intense violence. You know, maybe she goes to get help and get a protection order, And that's when he kind of flies off and decides to do something more radical. It really just depends, you know. I don't think.
How does the hitter justify the hit? How, at some point, you're mad, and so you reach out, you strike, and you went, "Oh my God, I struck somebody!" And I've never struck a human being in my life, but yeah, you know, you all get mad, and you say, "I'm really going to hit that
person,"
you know
what?
Or something.
You made me do it. I mean, that's what made me do it. If you wouldn't have badmouthed me, if you would have, you know,
it's your
not
fault,
cooked
not
the
my
chicken
fault.
That but long, I mean, if you would have just put your shoes away,
right?
I'm laughing, but it's going to be that simple. Yeah, right.
It's very that simple. But you know what, Sue? You mentioned something, and you said isolate. I mean, isolation to me. So in one of my characters of abuse here is the isolator, because I think when an abuser isolates its victim, he or she, when it isolates its victim, I really firmly believe that's the danger zone.
Yes.
Because that's when she feels so alone.
She
can't get out.
Nobody
because,
to talk to.
You know, they'll go and spread rumors about what other people are. They will make lies to make you prevent you from reaching out
and getting
help.
I'll tell you how important that particular aspect of isolation is. Okay. I mean, we started off this show 2 years ago with Carrie Kasem talking about what happened with her dad. Okay. And then about a year later,
A lot of which had to do with her isolating him from his family.
Right. Yeah. To the point where it turns out that in the cases of abuse, and now specifically to elder abuse, but I think this applies across the board with any cases of abuse or violence, is that isolation is a big red flag.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, there's a gentleman by the name of who called in at one point as a movie maker named of Cameron Glenar, who basically was doing a movie about isolation, and it was called Isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that is a big thing that happens, and I think the great thing about what we're doing here today and this kind of conversation is that I don't think you can pinpoint that here are things that will occur that will then lead to abuse. It's more of the awareness that it can be anything.
Oh yeah.
But there are certain common grounds like isolation, common grounds like basically, you know, financial control, things of that nature, that are huge.
So you mean there really may be 7 characters of abuse?
Yeah, so there's 7. I'll just
nice
go down.
Nice way to bring back the book.
Yeah, no, it's okay. So you've got the jealous stalker. You've got the mind game player, the person who always wants you to do one thing. You do what they requested, and then they say, well, I never made you say that. So it's kind of like that gaslight behavior.
Yeah.
Then you've got the isolator. We've talked about that. The emotional robber, somebody who's always telling you how to feel, how to behave, what to do, when, you know, it's just playing with your emotions. Then you've got the money monger, which is the financial abuser. You know, my dad always took control of the family finances, but it wasn't power and control. It wasn't crazy.
No, traditional roles doesn't mean abuse. I mean,
right.
That's, I think, what you're describing with
your mom. It's when you use that as a leverage
exactly,
to control somebody.
Right. Then you've got the pseudo-parent, you know, the OJs of the world, who outside look like they're the perfect dad, the perfect husband, but yet it's like they're anything but the perfect parent.
You know, Tanya, I'm gonna hand you these readers that are the sponsors from Hoshka Vision.
I need
because you're holding that book far away. So style.
It's more just like Wendy. You want to hold the book?
Sport those glasses.
There we go.
That's our sponsor for their Rad Life.
Yes.
Hoshka Vision from
Ken
Hoshka.
Now that I'm like on the last character, it's the silent night. You know, the silent treatment. You know, that's when the hamster starts going in the head, going. You know, that happened to me. And I share stories of guys who I've dated early on and Carolyn.
Did you consciously try and find one of each of these 7 to date here so you could write a book?
Yeah, it was my research.
Okay, all right.
No, but you know what? We all, I mean, really, you look back on your relationships from your childhood, teenage years, even if they were just like little crushes. There are signs there. So Carolyn and I, we really sat down. We were methodical. We just didn't want to use my clients, you know, back from the day as stories. I use Nicole's stories. I use my own stories. And Carolyn uses some of her friends and family stories. So it's not just about education and, you know, the ugly stories, but we're very introspective because I believe in order for personal change to happen, you got to ask questions.
Well, if you talk about, you know, it's really funny, right? Awareness isn't just outward.
Oh, yeah, no.
Awareness has to be inward as well. Sue, I think you were trying to say something.
And then we got to wrap up here.
I have to run. I have another thing I got to jump on, but thank you guys for doing this. Tanya, thank you for all you do. And Wendy and Garrett, I'll see you tomorrow night for Old Cella.
Yay, Old Cella.
Thank you, Sue, for calling in. We really appreciate
it. Sue, we'll see you soon. Thank you for all the work you do.
Well, it is starts with identifying, recognizing you have a problem. Isn't that the first step in the 12-step program?
Awareness.
You have to admit this. You have to admit you have a problem.
Well, but like you know, we always say that stuff comes out on this show just by talking. Because
yes,
and I said it this morning when we were having breakfast. You know, one of the benefits of the show, one of the blessings that I get to actually appreciate from the show is that we sit down and we have a conversation. We don't have a hit list. We don't have an agenda.
It's organic.
We don't have a to-do list, you know, of any sort. Yes, we are talking about the book, but it really leads us to different places. And the one thing I want to just, again, anchor, that when we talk about awareness to breast cancer, awareness to domestic violence, awareness to this, and we have, you know, I don't know, We could have a month where we're having, you know, like some sort of awareness to violence, and also, you know, it happens to be National Donut Day. You know what I mean?
Right.
But this is the kind of community society we live
in,
right?
Yeah, that's true. There's
right?
National Ice Cream Day.
You know, Hallmark card for this, and then basically, you know, we're celebrating do not beat up on people, right? I mean,
right.
You know? So I think the thing we forget sometimes is that when we're in the midst of that heightened case of awareness of what's happening to others, it doesn't happen to us.
Yep.
It's I'm aware of it. Somebody else is struggling with this. No. Awareness doesn't work that way. You really want to delve in. You really want to take that emotional risk. You got to look at yourself.
Yep.
You got to do that moral inventory about yourself and have that awareness be internally focused as well as outwardly focused.
I like moral inventory. You know, you can Google moral inventory, and there's actually a moral inventory that you can take.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really instrumental in the world of recovery as well.
Yeah.
Moral inventories are huge.
I think we as men have to recognize that there's that point in our life where we're taught by our buddies, by ourselves, to be a man, and that means that to go conquer women. Right, women are something to be objectified and conquered and taken, whatever. And we and both sexes play into this. You know, it's mm-hmm. this,
but
this game. But at some point, that game gets out of control, and it becomes about control.
Yeah, but it's always the danger of going down that path, even from day one, is that it will get out of control. I mean, I don't care if it was in the Middle Ages, or you're basically clubbing somebody on the head and dragging them to the cave,
right.
Or basically today, right? Honestly, I genuinely believe that one of the cases is that you have your own internal issues of confidence and lack of it.
Sure.
That you basically need to put somebody down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's like the old adage, if you really are strong in your faith, you do not have to marginalize somebody else's.
Right.
You don't. You're comfortable. You don't have to prove anything to anybody, right? And we hope that over time, as you get older, as we all get older, that we actually learn that we gain that sense of confidence. Unfortunately, there's no guarantee to that.
Right.
But we live in a society where you're supposed to be beating your chest all the time, whether it's Donald Trump or on the football field or in business. I crushed, I conquered, I won. We love this kind of image, men and women today.
Well, you know what happens when you pound yourself on your chest like that?
Mm-mm.
You cause internal bleeding.
And I think that's exactly what's happened to many of us. We're bleeding internally. We don't realize it.
So I know we're almost out of time,
yes.
Right? So I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Hoschka Vision, Todd Hoschka.
Spell that for us.
Hoschka. And the website is Hoschka Vision, Hoschka Vision.com.
Everybody who's seen these things because they're the coolest little glasses.
If you think you know anything about readers, I got a newsflash for you, okay? I can read and I can look straight up, right? And Tanya walked in, like, let me have that. Tanya walked in with these little beauties,
all
right?
They broke.
Okay, broken, okay?
From CVS
or
something.
This was the before from Tanya.
Yeah.
And then this is the after from Tanya. So go check out Todd's stuff. These are really cool. He has them in a couple of cool colors. And, you know, we try to seek vision and insight on this show. And now we have a sponsor that matches.
I got Christmas presents. I'm excited.
And Tanya said the weirdest thing, the minute she put them on, she said, "Ooh, I feel like a sexy librarian."
Sports those as we
I don't know when this librarian became sexy here.
So
but,
just... Thank you, guys. Thank you guys for joining us today. We'll see you guys next week. Gert and Wendy, thanks for sitting in on that. Sue, thank you so much for calling. And we will see you guys on The Rad Life next week.
Very cool.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.